We tell stories to share the human experience.
No matter what form it takes.
Actor, photographer, theatre maker, musician, whoever is trying to be heard.
We can't stop telling stories. There's no end to them.
By telling stories, we connect to each other and create a sense of community.
This is an opportunity to share stories from a talented and diverse range of individuals, in the hope it provides inspiration and knowledge.
This is a podcast about Australian storytelling in all its forms, hosted by two Australians in the arts industry.
Welcome to the Act of Storytelling. Hi, everybody.
I'm Nick Kane.
And I'm Lauren Bailey.
And thanks for listening.
Welcome back to our third podcast in the Act of Storytelling series. We've had another great response this month to our second podcast with the lovely sound designer Anita Quayle. So thank you again to our listeners for your interest and support.
So welcome to podcast three. And I tell you what, it has been a huge month.
It has been quite a big month.
Did you know that I went and got my new headshots? I think I was talking about this the other day.
Yes, with Sally Flegg.
With Sally Flegg, indeed. So I flew up to Sydney. And what a great experience that was.
Well, talk us through it.
Got up there. And the first thing we did when we were at her beautiful little studio, she said, let's just sit down and have a chat. Now, why I loved it and why that's so good for this podcast is she sat us down and we had a chat and we got to know each other. She said, before I can even go and shoot you, I need to know who you are. And it was so fantastic because I felt like we were mates from 20 years ago by the time we finished chatting. So it just made the whole experience of going out and shooting with her so relaxing.
Well, it makes it easier, but also that idea of knowing a bit about who you are. It's not just going to be nice photos of a person.
Correct.
It helps her tell us the story about Nick.
Yeah, it did. And we got to talk about what I wanted out of the shots. And I really feel like they're honest and strong. And there's a few different types that can work in different markets. So
how many headshots are you going with?
Look, I want one hero shot. And then I'll probably have four or five shots that show different sides of me.
Sure.
As well as that, I shot a commercial.
You had to fly interstate for that one, didn't you?
Yeah, it was a beauty. It was a Holden commercial for their SUV, which is the Holden Trax. Went over to Adelaide and shot, actually, and shut off all the streets in Adelaide and, you know, had the tracking vehicle there and was shooting these big shots, you know, in true...
I always love stopping traffic.
Yeah, oh, you know, yeah. It feels good. I felt like a bomber at some points. But it was good. We had a really, really good cast that I got along like a house on fire with, and it was a really good experience too. We talked about this off air, Lauren, but this idea of, you know, some people don't like to do commercials because they don't feel like it's part of their journey as an actor. I disagree with that. And the reason being is the fact that you get to go on site with these commercials and they're not always just really easy, laid back things. They're shooting quickly. So the idea that you get to go on set and ply your craft in some form, as well as work with the demands of a commercial shoot, is invaluable. So,
sure, well, that experience just being on set, it's such a fast turnover. I think it's a great experience.
Definitely.
So I know we'll probably talk about the masterclass with Ali in a second, but you've started some other training this month too, haven't you?
Yeah, with Gabby Rose Carter out of Q44. So I went and had a bit of a class with her and it was great. What I'm looking for at the moment is ongoing classes, and without putting pressure on her, I am looking for a bit of a mentor as well. You know, when you're a bit of a workshop junkie like I am, you have all these tools but no through line. So I'm looking for someone to help me over the journey and to get to know me as an actor, a sounding board and an outside eye. So no pressure, Gabby, but that's what I'm looking for.
Oh, I hope Gabby's listening.
What about you, Lauren? I know I've talked a little bit about...
it's a little overwhelming. A
little overwhelming, but we did just finish a masterclass with the wonderful Ale T. Miller.
Shall we talk about that first?
Let's talk about that first. What were your takeout?
I trained with Ale T. Miller in Bali last year. He's a teacher at the La Salle College of the Arts in Singapore, and he runs these amazing courses in Bali, and I did a lot of clowning work and a lot of really physical dancing and acting techniques and a whole range of stuff that I've not done before.
Yeah.
And at the culmination of the course, which was about 12 days, I made some really big discoveries in terms of my acting.
Could you share? Can we talk about that a little bit? Is that something?
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah.
As an actor, you have your habitual place that you go as a character. Mm-hmm. I don't feel unsafe playing big emotional roles. Yeah. But I think what has happened over the years is that throws me into this sort of victim zone, which is where I go habitually.
Yeah.
And we did a lot of work. And at the end of it, I discovered that I actually have this really powerful character inside me that I don't necessarily know enough about or work with enough, and that if I bring it to my acting, changes the game for me completely. So at the end of the training in Bali last year, I feel like I made these big discoveries and then I didn't know where to go with them next. So we were really keen to bring Ale over here to do some more work with him. And also, I haven't done training like that in Australia, so to offer that opportunity to other people. I mean, we did 3 days here, which is not enough to even study one technique.
It's dipping your toe in the water, isn't it, really?
Yeah. But it definitely gave me some tools to access that character I was talking about.
That's a really good point. I think the tools to access why you do these workshops, that's what I want to touch on with my takeout, actually, a little bit, is the tools that I got out of it. I went in there with a very specific goal, I guess. I felt like my acting was getting very heady or intellectual. And what I wanted to do was reconnect to my body, which for me, originally when I started acting, was where it all came from. That was my natural ability, if that's what you want to call it. I felt very comfortable coming from a place where my body was engaged. Over time, you become very intellectual about breaking down the scene and making sure you're getting what you need out of the scene and the character's got a backstory and all that type of stuff. And you maybe forget a little bit about making sure that your body is ready and your body is trained to ready to launch into the scene. So all this work, as you've already spoken about, I found some really, really good stuff where it's just once you get the body engaged, the rest follows. Because let's be honest, your instincts, if you've done all the work, are right. Following your body and following your mind and just letting it go. My takeouts. Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty great.
We're still buzzing a little bit, aren't we, from it?
Yes, we are. So thanks to everyone who was involved in the course. We also really fortunate. We had a great group of actors. It was pretty exciting.
Oh, I did want to cover one more point, actually, from the course. I know we want to cover everything, but this idea, there was a lot that we covered in regards to image and looking through another lens. And I really wanted to touch on this idea because it goes back to what you were talking, Lauren, about just dropping into the same old victim in your case.
Yeah, I'm not a victim.
No, but that's where, like, let's be honest, that's where you feel comfortable as a character sometimes.
I guess that's just straight. A generalization for talking about, you know, focusing too much on the sensitivities of the character rather than their will or the sides.
And we did some work on the final day on image work, so utilizing an image to maybe change the lens or
shift the perspective slightly.
And that was fantastic to see people's work being guided by those images as well, wasn't it? Because you started to see it from a different angle and you saw people starting to use that perspective, and it just made subtle changes to the work that was really fantastic.
The rest of March was really good. It was an interesting month. I think it took a little longer for me to come back from the show. I sort of thought it would take me a week or so to get back on track, and it probably took me a few weeks longer than that just to figure out, you know, what I want to be working on next, where I'm headed. What else did I get up to? I recorded an audiobook with a friend of mine, so that was a lot of fun, particularly thinking about, you know, the different voices of the characters. It was a child's book that we were recording.
Oh, great. So you really got to explore some voices then, I'm guessing.
Yeah, in a way that I haven't just for audio before. And so that's got me thinking a lot more about my voice. So I also mentioned in the last podcast that I was keen to get post-show to get back into auditioning. So I had a couple of auditions. One of those was, interestingly, just before the masterclass workshop started, about 20 minutes before.
Oh, literally 20 minutes before. There you go.
Which was just a really interesting experience because you have these habitual things that you do as an actor. And it was for a commercial. You often don't have days and days to prepare for them. And it's can be very naturalistic moments. So you snatches of moments. So you just go in and you try to keep it real.
Mm.
So I did it. And I think I did a fairly good job. Mm-hmm. But then we went away and did the training with Ale. And you did all that stuff that we just talked about, slightly changing perspective. And I just think, it would have been interesting to have done the audition just after we'd finished there. Workshop.
It would have been great.
I mean, in an ideal world. But, you know, there'll be more, so that's okay. It was just interesting to note.
Yeah, I mean, wouldn't it have been nice to have 8 hours of training or warm-ups before you went to the audition?
To really get in the zone.
So in previous months, we've interviewed a theatre maker, a sound designer, and now for this month, we're going to look at storytelling from another perspective with visual storyteller Jared Marshall.
We're here today with Jared Marshall, And we are going to be talking to him about his life as a storyteller. He has a lot of different roles in the industry. Find out about some of his experience, what drives him, what kind of stories he wants to tell. So over to you, Jared. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I sure can. I'm a freelance director of photography, a camera operator and a photographer. Sounds strange having three job descriptions, but that's how I cover the varied work that I do. As a DP, I shoot television commercials, music videos, films and documentaries. As a camera operator, I reserve that title for my TV work, big TV broadcasts, Formula One, Australian Open Tennis, AFL, all of that sort of stuff. And a photographer is self-explanatory, really. My work's been on various magazine covers and numerous stories, and my fine art images are now sold worldwide and gaining some momentum. I got into the industry by accident. I did media studies in high school, loved shooting little short films, very amateur, but I started thinking that that would be cool to do that as a career. The only influence at the time was being a fan of movies, because when you're a teenager, you don't really think about long-term influences. That's going to come later. And yeah, I'm from Melbourne, Australia. Don't hold it against me. I constantly do that myself. I've worked all over Australia, from Central Australia to all the major cities, Asia, the Middle East, and the United States.
Very nice. Now let's cover the fact that you're a fan of movies, first of all, because we are in the beautiful Palace Westgar Cinemas today. And
we are.
You chose this venue because...
Because it's a movie theatre, really. That's the only reason.
A bit of inspiration from the films. Movies.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's it, really.
Nice time.
Yeah, thank you.
So you sound like you're a very busy man, Jared. Before we get into the work that you're doing at the moment, let's go back a few years to when you were in high school doing media studies.
Yeah.
Do you remember what it was that first motivated you to get your own camera and start shooting films and... telling stories?
I didn't have a camera of my own. I used the one that the school had, and it shot to VHS tape. So it was a big shoulder mounted camera, but it had a VHS.
So it was more than a few years. We're going back.
We're talking 1997. Thanks.
To be specific. Yeah. Very nice.
But you had to do, there was, I can't even remember what it was. You know, one of the projects for the year was, you know, a film project.
Yeah.
So we came up, we didn't write a script. We just went out and filmed this stuff in the park over the road. And cut it together somehow.
And the story came after.
Yeah, but I realised that I kind of had a knack for cutting shots together, and yeah, that was about it really. I enjoyed it, but I wasn't thinking about, I didn't think about lighting, I didn't think about any of it.
And it would have been a very different process to these days as well, like going straight into it as far as VHS. What was the process there? You can't just get on Pro Tools, I guess, like you can now.
No, it was tape to tape. So you're editing and you're hitting pause and record on one machine, and pause and record on the next machine.
Yeah.
And you would just edit that way.
So it was a longer process, that's for sure.
Yeah, it was horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you still got the VHS tapes? Have you still got these films, footage?
No, I think I've got them on DVD though, somewhere.
Yeah.
Awful though. And yeah. You're never going to watch it. No one's going to see it, ever.
Well, the thing is that...
I'm the only one that has a copy of it, and no one else will ever see it.
Let's say, have you brought it out at any stage and watched it and gone, wow... That was
horrendous. I was brilliant from the beginning.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That's basically what my attitude is.
Yeah.
But the thing is, I'm acting in it.
Oh, right. So you did everything.
So you set up the camera and then there'd be two of you running around in front of it and then you'd move the camera and do it again.
Wow.
You see?
And that was the start.
That was the start.
And so let's start to talk about high school now as well. Mm-hmm. So did you go through high school and then go into some kind of studies past high school?
I did. I went to Deakin University.
Ah, yes.
And was majoring in media. But that wasn't practical at all.
Right.
And I lasted about 6 weeks.
Because?
And then deferred it. Because it's not practical. You get in there and it's the practical stuff comes in, you know, the third and fourth year.
They often start off with the...
Yeah, theory.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've just sat through 12 years of theory at school. I don't really want to do another couple of years. So I got out of that. Had a year off, basically. Worked a bit. And then went to NMIT and did television and film.
Which I hear is a really great course too. Like a lot of people do.
It was
that,
great. I'm not even sure if it's still running there.
Right.
But they had, at the time, it was one of the best courses you could do in Melbourne. Yeah.
Mm. So that's where it sort of really sparked and went, right, this is what
practical.
I want to do.
You got in there and the first day you've got cameras in your hands and they were broadcast cameras at that point and you're taking them apart and learning how lenses work and why they do what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Great.
So were there any obstacles along the way? I mean, obviously you went to uni, decided it wasn't right for you. You took a year off, you went back to uni. How driven were you at that point in your career? Was it still coming from that, oh, this is something that's interesting to explore, or this is what I'm going to be doing long term?
Well, there were so many options. You know, you get there and then it's like, well, there's so many things you can do. You can be a camera operator, you can be a sound guy, you can you know, be an editor, you can be a director. So you kind of get a taste of all those things. And at the time, I wanted to be an editor.
Right.
Because that's, you know, the VHS machines, one to the other.
It was actually quite...
That was your niche.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had a knack for kind of cutting stories together.
Great.
But as time went on, I got more and more camera work and not as much editing work, and I just kind of fell that way.
Went where the work was.
Yeah.
So do you feel like, because that leads us to the next thing, I guess, because you do a few different things. You've, you know, DOP, camera operator, photographer. Do you find yourself naturally going to one, or is there one that you find most enjoyment out of?
Being a DP is more enjoyable. Oh, not more enjoyable. It's a different challenge when you've got to bring all those elements together and you are telling a story.
Mm.
More so than if you're working at a sporting event and you're shooting football.
Yeah.
And there's a director telling you basically what you're to do.
Yeah.
You don't have... There's no, not so much of a creative input, I guess.
And how do you deal with that, you know, when you shoot something and you've got all this footage and then you hand it over to someone else and they edit it, particularly if you had such a strong editing background? Are you comfortable with that?
I'm comfortable with it as long as they do a good grade on the footage and it looks good.
Yeah.
Generally, I like to get it back and so I can do the colour correction on the footage, so I control that
element,
which all the old film guys used to do. But I just kind of feel like if you're shooting something nicely, but you're shooting it to be graded and they don't grade it, then you look like an idiot.
Well, it's true in a lot of different forms of that too, of film, because as an actor too, you do your performance, but you are guided by what they do with the camera and how they're shooting it, and you know, if the sound's not right or whatever. So there is an element of ownership as well, and thinking, well,
definitely, you definitely have what you want to get across to people. If you're not happy with it, you know, you'll never be happy with it if it gets out in the public. And it does happen a lot, especially when you're doing corporate stuff and there's no time.
Yeah.
People run out of time to do it.
Do you normally have the opportunity when you're working to have a really, you know, to spend some time with the editor and get a clear vision for what, you know, everyone in the team has the same vision? Or do you feel like your part in it is done and you just hand it over and it's...
It depends on the job. Yeah, corporate jobs, if you're kind of... If there's no real director and you're shooting and kind of doing the direction at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
That gets tricky, but that's where the client's opinions come in. Really handy, and they can deal with the editor.
And can I say, I just want to add on that point, because, you know, Jared, I've known you for a long time now, really, and
4 years is a very long time.
Well, it feels like a long time, but it's been a good time, you know, mate.
Yeah.
But just saying, as far as the corporate space and my corporate job, I've used Jared as a DOP editor regularly, and
along with your Metamucil.
One of the best things about working with you, Jared, is that you do have an eye and you can go, right, go away and do that. And if something doesn't look right, you'll come back and you'll say it and you'll go, you know what, I don't think they're going to like this. And from a project manager point of view, that's what you want, especially from someone who's shooting or editing, because it's a collaborative process.
It depends on the job. Some jobs there's no time to go back and reshoot things.
Oh, of course.
Other jobs, you look at things.
Sometimes time makes it more important, though, as well, that you don't have the time to necessarily go over everything, so having a second opinion is...
Well, that's just where it becomes instinctive after you do it for however many years.
Yeah.
If anyone's watched television, they kind of know anyway how to frame shots, roughly. They should. Yeah, it's a thing, after years and years and years, you kind of know what people need to make a story.
We're talking mostly about your corporate work here. You also do a lot of...
Yeah, let's not talk about that.
Your own personal projects, which we'll talk about in a minute. But do you feel like you have a specific voice, or that you are trying
with
to tell
own
a
work?
Particular story with your own work? Do you have that real sense of...
I think I have a definite look to things that I shoot, and I don't know if it's... Some things are done on purpose. Maybe it's just the way that I feel comfortable using a lot of the equipment, maybe. I don't like overly dramatic, you know, lighting and all that sort of stuff. I'd rather be trying to match whatever the ambient light is if you're lighting a scene, so that people don't really know where the lights are or if there are any. Obviously, there's lights. You need them, but...
So is it more... I mean, I don't know. Asking this question as a total actor...
Yeah, sure.
Is that more a documentary style of shooting?
No, I think it's just... It's a personal choice. Yeah, no one's to say what's right and wrong, really. You know, you can have everyone in silhouette if you want. That's a style.
Yeah.
You know, film noir.
I'm trying to think of something clever to say here about linear motives.
Oh, yes. So just to update you, Jared.
Yeah, that'd be handy.
Lauren has been reading a book called The Visual Story. So she mentioned in the last podcast. Yeah.
In case I forgot what the terms were.
So this kind of stuff, I guess, you've just been reading and you've learned a few things, and that's what
you're saying. I've learned about flat space and deep space and ambiguous, there's four, ambiguous space and open space.
It sounds like you know more than I do. Who wrote this book?
A guy called Bruce Block, which I started reading, and then I realised, of course, that we were going to be interviewing you, and I thought it would be a good idea.
Very cool. I better not read it now.
Not the best time. Yeah. But do you find yourself consuming a lot of books and content that teach you?
Are you constantly expanding? And
I am. Less and less books these days. A lot of it's online stuff, and a lot of it's technical these days because cameras are changing so fast. Mm. So you're trying to figure out what's the best format that I can shoot on that's cost effective for either client. Well, everything's to do with clients. There's budgets on, no matter what you work on, there's
budget. Corporate work, yeah.
So the guys with bigger budgets, obviously you go for higher end gear, but you still need to be constantly learning about that gear because it changes so yearly. Yeah.
So just moving on a little bit, you are a freelancer in the true sense of the word, that you do many different things. Like, you work for the major networks, you work for sporting bodies, so for instance the Formula One you do a lot of work with, and you've got connections to agencies that we've already talked about. How do you balance your different roles? So, you know, the demands of corporate work plus also creating your own personal work as well and doing what you love to do.
The personal work usually takes a back seat to the rest of your work.
Yep.
Just because of priorities, you know.
Putting food on the table.
Yeah, it's money. Yeah. Money's money. But in terms of, sorry, what was...
So I was just saying, how do you balance that as well? Like, corporate
versus TV versus...
Yeah, because I know you're always running around, because but how do you find that mix? How do you find that mix so that you're still doing that personal stuff that you love?
It's your spare time. Your spare time becomes your personal stuff.
Yeah.
I try and set out some time during the years so that I can get away from the city and get away from my phone.
Yeah.
That's the key. Have your phone off.
Yep.
Or go somewhere where you don't get reception
and
you
can go
and actually concentrate. Yeah. But everything else, just it's whoever gets in first, really, in terms of how you book up your time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we go back to this idea of having a voice in the work that you do you believe that Australians have a unique voice?
Yeah. We're in Northcote, so you're going to get a little bit of... that kind of action.
We tried to get the ambience of the Formula One in a cinema.
Fantastic.
I think we did pretty well. So do you believe that Australians have a unique voice or story
I think they
to
do,
share on the world
stage? But I think
stage?
It's very tricky for them. And you can see it with how many good Australian films there are each year that aren't being made. Like, there's so many good ideas, and then you see the ones that do get made. And there are some that are good, but there's a lot that you just think, why are they giving funding to that when there's so much other potential out there. It's the same thing with acting, like you guys would know. You see the same actors in everything. There's millions of actors. Why?
Do you have an answer for that? What do you think it is?
Audience. The Australian audience is so small. People want to see someone they recognise.
So
and people don't want to throw their money away funding these things.
And there's this ongoing debate about the need and role of government support for the Australian film industry. And some people argue in favour of government support as being the only way that we can, you know, compete against domination of Hollywood and, you know, the sorts of films that do get made each year. Others that the industry is viable without that support and will become stronger
if it's viable without it, but I also am constantly suspicious of why they give money to certain people over others. I don't know if it is because they're connected in some way to the funding bodies. I don't know. That's the only concern with that. I don't think it could survive without the government funding, really.
Mm. And it's also risk, I think, too, isn't it? When there's so little in the pot.
Yeah.
To then go and say, I'm going to try something completely different.
Yes.
It's almost like people would go,
well that's
why?
Often what they say it comes back to with casting, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Go with the people you know. I guess that's
true. Well, you'll
true
see some actors on multiple networks in TV drama in Australia. The same actors will be in two or three shows all on different networks at the same time.
Yeah.
But it's because the public know who they are and the sponsors or whoever's giving funding know that, oh, well, this will draw some audience in, maybe.
Yeah.
Whereas in America, there's 320 million people. There's so much more diversity, I suppose, in terms of what's being made.
And that's an interesting point. And that brings me on to my next question, because you do spend a lot of time in Australia, but I know you also spend a little bit of time in the US.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to know, how do you balance your lifestyle? Do you look to see yourself in the US more permanently?
Yes, definitely.
Yep.
Yeah. I'd if I could split time between the two places
yep.
evenly, that would be obviously the dream, but that's very difficult the way visas work and all that sort yep. of stuff. But the work that you can get in America, not that it's easier to get because there's more competition, but there is more work and people there are willing to meet you, you know?
Yeah.
Here, it's hard enough just to get through past someone's secretary. Over there, you will get a meeting by sending an email or making a phone call with the executive producers
mm.
just so they know who you are.
Touch on that a little bit further, because I was going to touch on this cultural issue. So mm. obviously in Australia, it's a different industry. Do you find that there's any cultural barriers when you do go to the States?
I think it's beneficial to be in Australia.
It's better.
Yeah.
Do you feel the way you tell stories as an Australian, that sort of difference in perspective is what helps, or?
No, I think it's more to do with they see us that we work hard, and the reason we do is because we've got more to lose than the Americans yeah. do.
Mm.
You know, if we fail there, then you're going home.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot Does more invested sense? Is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. Of course. You've got a lot more to lose. Mm. It's a bigger risk for you to go over there and fail than it is for a local over there to fail.
So would you say there are any sort of recurring themes in the work that you do?
I'm not sure. Maybe some of the stories that I come up with when I'm thinking of writing scripts and stuff. It doesn't happen often, but recurring themes, maybe not. In my photography, there probably is. It's more of a surreal element.
Yeah, because I would say...
Without making it look fake, that's kind of the trick these days.
Because everyone's got good cameras and everything. Hyper-reality or...?
Yeah, definitely.
And I would say, you know, there is a couple of themes, and without putting words in your mouth, there's things like, I think you're quite interested in motorsports. I think music is another one. I think the American lifestyle, and I don't know whether that's because you've spent a lot of time in the States, but you do seem to, your photography especially...
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of, you know, beautiful American cars and desert and all those type of things.
Yeah. I mean, we've got beautiful deserts and cars and stuff here.
But we don't see a lot of that.
No, we don't because it takes so long. Oh, in my work?
Yeah.
It's harder to get to here. You can drive for days and days and you're not in the desert yet.
Yeah.
If you're in Los Angeles, you can drive south for a few hours and you're in Mexico.
Yeah.
You drive north and you're in the mountains.
Yeah.
You drive east and you're in Death Valley, you know? It's kind of like the Americans see themselves. Everything's bigger and better, but it is very dramatic compared to our landscape, in a sense.
I was going to say, there's a real dramatic energy in your landscape photos
yes.
that is not... It doesn't feel Australian.
No, and I was saying this to someone the other day that I should actually take some more shots.
I think it was me, to be honest.
Might have been you, actually.
It was.
Because I just think like we're really dominated by American stuff, a lot of my work. But maybe I find it easier to shoot. I don't know.
Yeah. Do you reckon it's been influenced by what you've seen as well?
Of course it has. Yeah. Definitely. A lot of locations that I'm like, that place is cool and I have to go and see it.
Can we talk about what motivates you? Mentioned that you've done a lot of photography of the US and that ideally you'd like to do more work there. You know, is that sort of your focus at the moment? Are there ties here? Yeah, what drives you?
I don't know. I don't know.
It's whatever you find in the moment.
I definitely have that drive to be over there and working. And I don't know if that's because from growing up, maybe. Because all the films that we saw growing up, most of them are American. And so if you want to be in that world and working in the industry at that level, they're the only ones that are going to bring the money to the table. So,
and what's your favourite?
Not that it's about money.
But what is your favourite project that you've worked on so far in your career?
There's a few. Favourite project?
It's a big one, isn't it?
Because I do so many different kind of things. Like, there's obviously favourites in TV, like doing Formula One is one of my favourites, just because of the crew, basically. Those guys are so different to the way Australian crews run.
And you work with the same crew across different countries?
With Formula One? Generally it is, yeah.
Yeah.
So Melbourne and Malaysia, they'll bring out a heap of guys from England and Europe, and a handful of Aussies will do Melbourne and KL and whatever.
How did you even find that? I'm quite interested to know how
Good
you
job.
Even got... Yeah, in that...
I got a phone call out of nowhere because one of the guys pulled out because he broke his hand.
Right.
And he had his cherry picker license, which I also had, and I'd shot the V8s for a number of years in Australia. And so he pulled out and gave them my number and said he's got his cherry picker license if you need someone.
Well, you do.
And they called me from England.
We should make a note of that if we ever need anyone with a cherry picker license.
We know someone.
Yeah.
But that's interesting too, because you do stuff with drones now. We were talking the other day, you're learning to use the camera on top of a drone.
Oh, yeah, it's a bit of a learning curve in terms of how the drones work, but in terms of using the camera, it's
the same.
It's pretty easy, really, because I've done remote camera work before, either at the tennis or the V8s, using Cineflexes and all those sort of...
Yeah.
I won't go into the details, but...
It's just beautiful stuff. Like, we might actually put a link to, if we can, show me a video the other day of some of your work.
Oh, yeah,
we might
cool.
be able to put a link on our website of some of the drone work, which is just... I haven't seen some of that stuff ever. Like, it's just beautiful shots looking over the top of cities, over the top of Abu Dhabi, just beautiful
stuff. A lot of those things... All it takes is to get up higher.
Yeah.
There's no magical tricks going on with the camera.
Is that one on your website?
There's a link to it, I think, yeah.
Vimeo. Yeah, we'll find it and pop it on there.
Cool.
pop it up.
So is there any other projects? So you've mentioned you love to work with the Formula
F1 in terms of TV, yeah. Yep. I mean, a lot of those big things are cool, though. You know, you're doing the Australian Open.
Yeah.
And as much as I complain about it at the time when it's 45 degrees and you're melting in the heat and all that sort of stuff.
What about your personal stuff? What's been your favourite?
Yeah, what are you most proud of?
Oh, that's tricky. Personal stuff. It'd be my photography work, I think. It's more and more becoming more of a priority rather than just being in the background.
Do you feel as a photographer you can say things through that medium that you can't say, you know, because the film work you're doing is so corporate, or that you just can't say through that
medium? I know what you, mean. Possibly, yeah. If you can try and capture a feeling with one frame, it's very different to capturing something that's moving.
It does remind me, there's something in the book that I read about how a picture has no secrets. You can continue to look at a picture, and each time you do, you'll notice something new, and everything is exposed. It's different from other mediums in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. Because film, you're being directed by someone else of where you're looking constantly and what you should be paying attention to.
Yeah.
Whereas with a photo, it's there. And there are ways of leading people's eyes into certain parts of the image, but generally it stands alone by itself. So
do you have a favourite storyteller? You know, either a cinematographer?
I have favourite directors and all that sort of stuff, definitely. Yeah, definitely have favourite directors.
People you've worked with, or just someone's work that you really appreciate?
There's favourite guys that I've worked with, but I think that's the same as anyone. There's always your favourite people that you work with doing whatever you do. Mm. But in terms of influences, I think I did a short film with you, Nick.
Oh, yes.
Is Nick your favourite person?
I was about to be very flattered then. Oh, wow.
No.
It's not going to be me, though.
Just think before you say this. Yeah.
But a lot of that styling, when I look at it, is all very Michael Mann, not Michael Bay.
No, Michael, not to be Mann. Confused, yes.
Different. Collateral and Heat and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, not Transformers.
It's very stylized stuff, and it's... he was from an advertising background, and you can see it in his work, and I think that influences the way I shoot car commercials or any of that sort of stuff. Mm. Definitely.
So I asked Nick to list two things that he admires about you, and...
Can I guess them?
Okay, sure.
Go on, guess away.
Well, that's inappropriate.
This is unexpected?
No, I don't know, actually.
Okay, well, he said...
He must be lying.
Yeah.
He told me.
I'll accept the bottle of wine after you hear these.
He said that you have an amazing eye for detail and an especially good understanding of technical requirements behind the camera. Would you agree with this assessment? And if you do, have these things come easily to you, or have you had to work for them?
The more I overthink things, the more I feel like I'm working for them now. Like when I was younger, you're not thinking into anything. Does that make sense? Eye for detail, you're just kind of doing it. But now I sit there pondering over, you know, a photo. I can work on a photo for days before I'm kind of happy with what I've been doing to it. And what was the other one? Technical details behind the camera.
Yeah. You just seem to know what to do with the camera. If there's something that isn't working, you just seem to know what to do to go, right, let's try this, to try and get something.
Getting the image better at that. And I stress more about the details, you know, the eye for detail. I stress a lot more about looking for those details now than I ever did. And sometimes I think I work too hard on doing that.
Yeah, right. Okay.
It should be more natural. I'm forcing something to be better than it is. I don't know.
But that's a part of perfectionism too, isn't it?
Maybe, yeah. But I get angry at myself.
So there seems to be a bit of a growing interest in your work, especially your photography, which we've touched on. Mm-hmm. You've received various awards, and there are a number of prints for sale on your website and on Fine Art America.
Yeah, they're probably the biggest one because it's just easy to sell them that way. I mean, it would be great to have a gallery in three cities around the world and be selling them for thousands of dollars, but that's not realistic.
No, I was having a look at your Facebook page the other day and seeing some of the shots, which are amazing, and... Thank you. Obviously they direct you back to the websites where you can purchase them and
some people are buying them.
Like, there's a lot of traction there. I don't know, it was really exciting to see that.
It's funny, people from France buying photos of the Brooklyn Bridge taken by an Australian.
How does that feel too?
That's a good feeling. Especially when you see the size of some of these prints that are being done.
Yeah.
You know, printed on or etched into metal and they're 4 metres wide and hang up in some place.
That's great
in Paris
to hear
somewhere.
Too, because you look at them and they look like they need to be
They do need to be big prints. And that's one thing that puts me off the whole, you need to do Facebook and all that sort of stuff, but everyone's looking at it on their phone or a computer screen, and even that for me isn't enough while I'm working on them.
Yeah.
But you put it on a 55 inch television, that's how they should be printed.
Yeah,
at that size, if you're going to get a print and have it framed.
Yeah,
but it's a large. Odd comparison, but I remember when I was studying art at school and we studied Brett Whiteley. And I was like, oh, yeah. I just don't really like this stuff. And then we went and saw his work at the National Gallery, and I realised how big it was. And in its real size, I found it completely compelling. And
it draws you in.
Emotional, yeah.
Yeah, you get a sense of space. Because you shoot a lot of things with a wide-angle lens. And that's meant to draw you in. And they're meant to be seen
large.
Large,
yeah. Yeah. And so I guess these little thumbnails on the websites.
Yeah, people go, really, wow, that stuff in Monument Valley looks awesome. I'm like, wait till you see it.
Just
wait till it arrives. Yeah, yeah.
And you did just...
And it feels like you can walk into the desert.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Anyway, that's my hope.
You just put a big one in a Melbourne office building the other day, didn't you? Yeah. They just bought the work. And
that was interesting. Yeah, I actually didn't know how to go about getting that print done. It was 6 metres long by 1 metre high.
Which is huge.
Wow.
Yeah. There's a couple of places that do it, and there's various options, and I won't go into that. But yeah, that was flattering. That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was worried when I was when I picked up the print and got it delivered to their office, and I was looking at it thinking, do I really want to be here while they're looking at it for the first time? Yeah. But thankfully,
you felt naked, mate. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, your art up on their wall, yeah.
Yeah.
And where to from here? Have you got any exciting projects going on at the moment or coming up?
Not specific projects, not really. I'm working on my green card for America. Ah, so yes. That's kind of
an exciting project.
It's exciting and it's frustrating at the same time, because I'd love to kind of get back there once the football season's over this year. But who knows how long this process will take. And while that application's pending, you can't travel to the States. So.
Right.
We'll wait and see.
Yeah. Do you feel like you've achieved a lot of things in the discipline? Do you think there's a lot that you still want to do?
Oh, yeah, there's heaps that I still want to do, yeah.
Mm. Well, what drives you to keep working? Is it because there's still things to do, or is there a specific motivation?
It's because I'm not doing... I haven't reached the place yet where I think that I should be, if that makes sense.
Mm.
Not the level, because I'm already doing some cool things and everyone says, oh, well, you're doing this and that and it's amazing. Mm. But it's not kind of what I aimed to do when I left high school.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Like, if I want to be making films or TV drama, then you can shoot all the commercials in the world and make all the money you want.
Do you have money.
But it doesn't fulfill what you want out of it.
But yeah, there's a lot of stress that comes with all of that.
And do you have a preference? Yeah. Obviously, they're both screen, but they're vastly different in their formats. And
in terms of television and film?
Yes.
It'd definitely be film. Yeah, I enjoy shooting commercials more. Well, not more. Yeah, it's a tricky one.
Yeah.
But always, a lot of it depends on the people you're working with. You can do a little corporate shoot, like the one when I first met you, Nick.
Yep.
Small
4 years ago.
Shoot. Years ago, everybody. Nick was acting.
Very well, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, small corporate shoots with small crews that you do use on bigger jobs, but that's one of the best shoots that I've done.
I do remember that, and one of the best things about that was the crew. Like, it felt like a family. It felt like we had a lot of fun doing it, and the result was great. So it's one of those things where you sort of go, wow, if you could have that every time,
yeah,
wouldn't this be amazing?
Yeah. That's the aim, anyway, that just one person drags the others along. At some point.
Yes.
We'll see.
That's good. And networking, I guess you know a lot of the cameramen. Do you work together? Do you find you call each other up and go, hey, there's a gig? Or
we do if there's jobs and you can't make one job. You know, you recommend names for... That's the way it works in this industry.
Is it like when you audition, you'll always run into someone? Do you always...
Oh, especially television, any job you go to, you know most of the guys there. And especially in Australia, because it's such a small... industry, you've got 3 major networks.
Yeah, well, that's true. Yeah.
You know what I mean? There's not that many guys that they can fill their crew with that you'll never bump cross paths.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we've just got a couple of last questions for you. If your life were a film, which film would it be?
Which film would I want it to be? Or which film would it be?
Your choice.
My life was a film. Pretty dull film.
Or, you know, is there a story out there that really resonates with you, and when you watched it you think, yeah, that really encapsulates what I'm trying to achieve or where I'm coming from?
I watched Mystic River the other week, which I loved, and I hadn't watched it for ages. Have you seen it?
Yes.
I'm trying to recall
it. Yes, I have. It took me...
Clint Eastwood directed it, and it's got Sean Penn and Tim Robbins.
It's very moody.
It's very moody, and it's, you know, it's... well-paced. It's not slow, but its pacing is perfect. The acting is perfect. There's not an overuse of camera work. There's none of that shaky camera stuff that goes on with most films these days. And if you could do that, and it's simple, and I think that's what Australian films should be doing, to tell simple stories. Don't go so overly dramatic. Simple. Simple story. Good characters, good actors, good direction.
Can I also add, if your life was a TV show, it would probably be Curb Your Enthusiasm?
Thank you.
Who don't know Jared, he does have a bit of a reputation of being Larry David. And if you don't know Larry David, creator, producer of Seinfeld, also lead star of Curb Your Enthusiasm, he has a particular way about him, doesn't he?
We do have rules that society aren't aware of And I do get angry that when they're not obeying those rules, even though no one knows them. Yeah. But they're the unwritten rules that run our lives, you know, as we're going about our days.
And you know what's funny about this is, if you haven't seen Curb Your Enthusiasm, Larry David actually based George Costanza from Seinfeld.
Yeah, we don't need to keep after himself, comparing me to these people. Yeah.
So if you've got a little bit of George Costanza out of that, that would be that'd be right.
Thanks.
Yeah. I thought you guys were friends.
So the final question I want to ask you, Jared, is there any advice that you would give to filmmakers or photographers that are starting out in the industry?
Don't do it, do something else.
Very self-deprecating. Like, what would be your advice?
Pay attention. Cameramen are the angriest guys in the world by a mile. Like, the angriest people I know are all cameramen. But pay attention to them, because they're usually pretty good. The angrier they are, the better they are.
Is that because their eye for detail and their perfection, and they
it's, yeah, they're professionals at their job, and obviously over years you get faster and faster and faster.
Yeah.
But your assistants are always someone new, and they just cop the wrath of these guys that are now working so fast.
Yeah.
And these new people are meant to keep up with them, and they can't.
Yeah.
But you do learn a lot from seeing how those guys work, and seeing how much you actually don't have to shoot, as opposed to shooting everything, or how to tell stories. There's some guys out there that don't know how to tell stories. You can see it in news, you know, news cameramen. You can watch a news broadcast, and you think that this doesn't make any sense. They're just cutting to, you know, pictures of something related, but it doesn't tell a proper story. The good guys will tell a proper story from beginning to end. They'll establish the place, the time, then they'll move in, show the people.
And it's stuff we don't think about. If you're not a storyteller in that medium, you don't think about it. And I remember a story from an older cinematographer back when they used to shoot the news, that used to shoot on reels. When they were submitting their work, the producers always said to them, it can't be longer than 3 minutes of reel.
Yep.
Because, you know, reel was physical stuff. It wasn't just digital space, right? So it can't be longer than 3 minutes. And what he said was great about that was, it really made you think about your story before you shot it. So rather than going out and just shooting everything and hoping that you've caught something, you actually had to think about your story.
Yeah. It's the same as photography.
Yeah.
Digital and film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you'll see it if you ever go to a wedding. You'll see a wedding photographer just going on the, because they can, and why wouldn't you? Obviously, back in the film days, you had to pay attention to when you were pressing the shutter.
And it surely makes it easier to know your story before you start.
Oh, of course.
Gunning away.
That's another thing that some directors in particular aren't able to see, and I've worked with them. They can't pre-visualise what they want later. Like, anything that I've done myself, I can see, as I'm writing it down, I know how it's going to play out. I know that what the camera moves are going to be. I know I don't need to shoot that extra pickup close-up of an actor, because it's not needed, because I know how it's going to run in my head. Some directors just, let's just do it for the sake of it, so let's shoot everything from everywhere. And then we've got all the options in editing, but that's not right. They obviously don't know what their story is while they're making it.
So pay attention and be specific.
I think that's totally your thing, is be specific. Your eye for detail, as I was saying.
Well, be able to see something.
Yeah.
Pre-visualise what you're doing.
Mm.
What am I trying to do?
Using your creative eye.
And everyone's seen stories be told, so you should know by now what's needed. You know? If someone was shooting us doing this right now, they would shoot the outside of the cinema to establish that that's where it is.
It would be a pretty interesting piece of whatever it is. It would be,
in the beautiful Palace Westgarth Cinema.
Oh, it's lovely here.
Another plug.
Nick going for tickets.
Free tickets will be accepted. Thanks for your time, Jared. It's been a real pleasure.
That was very fast and easy.
And easy, yeah.
Oh,
I feel boring, though. Was I boring?
No, you weren't boring at all. It's fascinating. It's brilliant to be able to look at, you know, what we do, but from a completely other perspective.
And it may
pay
seem normal.
Actors, pay attention.
Yeah, pay attention. And it may seem normal to you, but for us, this is a whole new
I think that's
space.
What it is as well. Because I've never had a real 9-to-5 job. Not really.
Show
and
off.
You just hope that you've had... but you just hope you've got enough fingers. That's another stress that comes with what we do, because you don't know. Sometimes you look at your calendar and, well, where am I working next week? Nowhere. Okay. But you learn to live with that, and you can see further ahead and go, well, I know that's coming up, and I know I'll probably be working on that, so that'll be okay. And it's worked so far, so...
Good on you. Let's hope it keeps working for you, mate.
Thanks again
for your time.
Thanks so much, Jared.
Great. Bye. Cheers.
My takeaway was this: pay attention, but pay attention on a larger scale. Pay attention to everything that's going on around you. Stop thinking so much about what am I doing, what am I training into. Pay attention to the world and the stories and the industries, and be specific. You know, don't try to get every role. Sorry, I'm relating this back to my acting, obviously. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But think about the story that you want to tell and then go after that.
Mm. I agree. I think that idea of having this creative eye to make sure that you look at the big picture is so important, whatever you do. Because if you can't see the forest for the trees, so to speak, then what are you doing? You're just kind of travelling on your own little path.
Just sending out energy in a whole heap of different directions and not sure where you're headed. So when you get somewhere, well, is this what I wanted?
Mm.
Pay attention and be specific.
Well, you totally stole mine. Mine was going to be specific too.
Oh,
because,
sorry.
No, because I think that, you know, speaking to Jared, his eye, as I've mentioned this 100 times, but his eye for detail, his ability to look at something and go, well, how can I make that just this little bit better? It's almost like these little shifts that he just goes, right, maybe we try this. And it's not big. And as he said, Simple stories, simple things. Just be really specific, and maybe it's being a bit of a perfectionist, but try to get the best out of the story. And I think, as you can see, he's very self-deprecating, but I think
sometimes
that helps drive him to better things, don't you think?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you can't have that self-awareness of your work,
yep,
that's really important to be able to stand back and look at it and go, is that right? Is that where I was going?
Mm.
No, it needs more work. You know, when he said he could work for days on a photograph.
Yeah.
It's very exciting stuff.
It's good, isn't it? Well, there you go. A very different podcast to probably our other two, which is fantastic.
Been different. Yeah.
Another discipline.
What's coming next?
What a top interview with the top bloke.
Yes, I was checking out some of the links to his work on his website. I know I keep mentioning the book I'm reading, but this idea of open space and how difficult it is to establish the idea that a picture extends beyond the four frames that's surrounded.
Mm.
And I really feel that way when I look at Jared's work. It's so vast and open, and that idea of extension, it makes me feel like things are possible.
You're going to be a DOP before you know it, the way you're going with that book. I mean, but that's...
In case my acting career doesn't go where I want it to go.
My personal favourite thing about working with him is this idea that he's just straight down the line. I mean, he just cuts through all the distracting factors and just goes, this is what the story's about. Let's concentrate on this and make sure that
the spine.
Correct. So we're not getting caught in all the madness of what's going around. Make sure you hit that point, because if you don't hit that point, why are we doing this? So that's what I've felt like. I've worked with him on multiple shows. We spoke about the VEA film. Lion's Den was another one where he took a song by the Traveling Wilburys and then turned it into a short film, and we shot that, which was fantastic to shoot.
It sounds like a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. We did another film clip together called Every Day I Dream, and once again, we just got to the heart of what the song was about, and that's why I think it's so powerful. He does the same thing with the stuff that he does with the corporate world, which, you know, when I've used him at my job at Bunch, you know, he does the same thing. He goes, well, what's the core of the message? Let's get that right.
You've mentioned before you feel like there's a bit of a tie-in between your corporate work and your acting work.
There is actually a great tie-in that I've been working with our creative director for a period of time with, in regards to great presentations in the corporate world and how you can bring in the techniques and exercises of acting to help you create a great presentation. And I mean, it even plays off the back of this podcast, this idea of storytelling and how it comes across. And so over the past 2 or 3 months, I've kept it very quiet because I didn't know how it was going to go. Over the past 2 or 3 months, I've really worked on this idea of how you can bring the exercises of what we do as performers into how we can deliver great presentations and also just be better people, you know, in the corporate world as well. So there's...
Yeah, that's really interesting. So Jennifer Innes, who helped me run the workshop with Ale, I'll be doing my ongoing voice classes with her. She's a voice and dialect coach.
Very good one too.
In Melbourne. Yeah. And there's only a handful of them, and they're generally run off their feet. They're in such high demand. So I've squeezed my way into her schedule and we'll be doing ongoing classes with her. But she has talked quite a bit about this idea of doing voice work for corporate. So it's a similar principle. I'll actually put a link to her website on our website.
Yeah, please do.
Because if anyone needs voice or dialect work, she's great.
And can I continue off that train of thought in regards to acting coming into the corporate world? I've got a little recommendation for Melbourne Playback Theatre, which are doing some workshops. And the idea of the workshops is to offer training modules to professionals who want to increase their adaptability and confidence in the work environment. So then you should check out the Facebook website, which is Melbourne Playback Theatre Melbourne Workshops. And they've got multiple dates throughout the next couple of months. But the one that I'm particularly interested in going and checking out, Lauren, is the storytelling one. They've got 4 nights happening. And what I might do is head along, and if you're keen, Lauren, you can come along as well. Yes. And we can go along and check it out.
It's interesting that there's a bit of a focus in that direction at the moment too.
There is, yeah, yeah. What about you, Lauren? What's up for this upcoming month?
Doing a bit of examination at the moment of where I'm specifically headed next. I mean, I definitely want to be doing more TV work. So yes. Hoping to be doing more auditions this month. But also we've had some international interest in the show that we did at La Mama.
Oh, very nice.
So it's very exciting. Going to be talking to Adam about workshopping the script a little bit and where we might take that. So that
great. Isn't that exciting?
And I think also a really great example of when you commit yourself to a project and give it your heart and soul, I suppose. You come out the other side of it. It's not, you don't know where life leads. A great example of you don't know where life leads. That's my point.
Very nice. Do you have any recommendations for this month, Lauren?
I wanted to mention, I went to a screening just after we went live with our last podcast of a web series that's done by two Melbourne actresses, Hayley Butcher, and I hope I'm saying this right, Katrina. Katrina Mroz. And they are great comedic actresses. And they have developed these characters, Dash and Debris.
Oh, yes.
So they've got a brilliant web series that hopefully will be online shortly. So they did a promo screening at the Loop Bar in the city.
Yeah, nice.
And, you know, they did a possible campaign. I don't think the budget was that huge, but the production qualities are excellent.
Oh, and they're very just funny girls too, aren't they?
They are. So I just wanted to do a shout out for them. As I said, the web series isn't up yet, but you can go to their website, which is, they've got a blog and it's a bit of fun. So we'll put a link to that on our website so you can check out when it'll start screening because, you know, they were on Australia's Got Talent originally. Oh, it references that.
Hugely funny. And, you know, they're right into that kind of Australiana girl kind of,
you know. It's really nice to see people playing around with that image in, you know, to the rest of the world, but in new ways.
Yeah, in fresh ways. So that has been podcast 3. And you probably came through the usual ways to find us, which is through SoundCloud and through our About Me website. But there will be the opportunity to download this podcast from iTunes this month. So people can download and listen to us while they're out for a morning run or whatever it might be. So keep an eye out for it. It's going to be out this month.
As always, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and check out the about.me page for all the latest updates and previous episodes. Remember to hit us up on any of these forms to provide feedback and let us know anything that we can do to make the show better or more relevant to you.
And continue to join us for the act of storytelling. Thanks everyone for listening.